Hello and welcome to this week's message from Ed Carter, Senior Pastor of Valley Church. Catch up on more messages and hear the latest from Valley Church online at valleychurch.eu/messages or download them from iTunes. For more information about what's going on in the life of our church, visit valleychurch.eu. Enjoy the message.
Well, today, in case you haven't figured it out yet, we are starting a series to last 3 weeks, finish on Easter Sunday, entitled You Are Loved. And the reason why we wanted to do this title was, do you know, love is something that every human being desires. You desire love, I desire love. And yet this world is lacking so much love and doesn't truly really understand what love is about or what love is and how love should work. And we just wanted to speak, hopefully, so that we may discover or rediscover the depth of love that God has for us and how we can live in that and then, as it were, love others, outwork that in our everyday lives. The best definition, in case you ever want to look it up, is in 1 Corinthians 13, verses 4 to 8. And I won't read it out now. We're going to read it out a lot over the next few weeks. But that passage talks about what love does. Like, love is kind, love is good, love is not self-seeking. Love doesn't think about wrongs and keep a record of wrongs. It says lots. You see, love is an action, right? Yeah. You can't truly love somebody without doing something about it. You know, I know if my family love me because they're doing stuff, and if they're not doing stuff, then, well, they might say they love me, but I don't know, right? Because love expresses itself in action. It always does. But we also wanted to remind everybody over the next 3 weeks that love is also a feeling. And God loves us, not just in action, but has a heartfelt passion for us. He loves you passionately because he loves you. Emotionally, he loves you. And that drives him to do what he does. He doesn't do it because it's just the right thing to do, though it is the right thing to do. He does it because he wants to, because he loves us. And we wanted to help you, if you know Jesus, to come into this place in the next 3 weeks where you would love God. If you already love God, you would love God more. Yeah. You see, if you really love somebody, helping them flourish, pouring stuff into their lives is easy, right? Yeah. When you first meet that girl or that boy, you remember those days, some of you? Long time ago for some of you, I know. You'd almost do anything, right? Because you love them and you want to please them, make them happy and all that kind of stuff. It's really easy. We see as Christians, if we love God, following him isn't hard. It's just a natural outworking of how we feel. Yeah, yeah. Right? And, you know, so often I hear Christians say, oh, does God really want me to do that? And part of me goes like, well, yes. But I don't want to try and convince you. I want you to just go, well, if that's what God wants, I love him enough, and therefore I want to do it. And you see, over the next 3 weeks, if you can just stir some love in your soul and your hearts, perhaps for the first time, or stir up what you have, or, I don't know, re-engage with it. So at the end of the series, you go, you know, I'm following God. No, because I have to. Because it is right to follow God. Even if you don't feel like it, it's still the right thing to do. He's the king of the universe, right? It's the Lord of all. There is judgment. It's the right thing to do. But actually, it'd be so much nicer for all of us, right? So much easier. The world will see something different. If a whole bunch of people say, I don't follow God because I feel like I have to. I follow God because I love him and I want to. I want to follow him. And that's kind of our heart. See, love is a feeling and actions, a deep commitment for each other. Well, I picked this subject, but it is a bit like the short straw, right? So, because I want to talk about love is self-sacrifice. True love has self-sacrifice in it. And the reason being I wanted to pick this is this. People long for love in their lives, but they want it free. They want it free, no strings attached, no cost implied for me. They want it free. And I've learned, and the Bible teaches, that true love costs. In fact, it goes beyond that. He says, if you want to experience true love, you have to, it's going to cost you probably up front. to experience true love. And I want to tackle it because I want you to know that I am absolutely passionate. I believe that if you want to truly experience love, a love of God and a love of fellow human beings, sacrificing yourself from time to time is not just an optional extra. It should be part of your, maybe not everyday life, but it should be part of your ordinary life. Yeah. Self-sacrifice is not an optional extra to experience true love and true intimacy with another. The Bible doesn't teach that, and it's just not true. Love is self-sacrifice. Love is us sacrificing ourselves to others. Obviously, Jesus demonstrated this, and we just talked about that in Claire-led communion beautifully, by the way. Very well done. Really enjoyed that. John 10 says that Jesus lays down his life for his sheep. And Romans 5 verse 8 says this about what God did for us. Romans 5 verse 6 says this. You see, just at the right time, when we're still powerless, Christ died for the ungodly. Very rarely will anybody die for a righteous man. You know, for a really good person you really like, you might possibly die for, right? Maybe for a good man, Paul says, you might possibly dare to die. But God demonstrated his own love for us in this. While we're still sinners, or while we're God's enemies, Christ died for us. Love is demonstrated through sacrificial acts, sacrificially doing something for another. And Jesus says in John 15:13 that greater love has no one than this than to lay down his life for his friends. And Jesus is trying to say, how I've loved you, I'm asking you both to love God and to love others in the same way, in a self-sacrificing way. So I'm going to ask two questions. Is that okay? Two questions. The first one is this. Remember thinking about so that we can experience true deep love. That's the whole point of the message. It's not to hit you over the head. It's all right. And I want you to know that up front. Otherwise, I'll just end up hitting myself over the head the entire message, which I don't want to do either. So this is a message that I'm hoping will help each one of us actually experience love in greater and deeper ways. I want to ask two questions. The first one, what does it mean? And the second, what does it look like? All right? So the first question is, what does it mean? And I want to say it means two things. It means two things. Self-sacrificing love means, first of all, it means that we sacrifice costly things. Or things that cost us. Things that cost us. I'm not talking about value, as in absolute value. I'm talking about things that cost you. Something that costs somebody, value-wise, might be very sacrificial, but another person might give the same cost, but actually it's no sacrifice at all. You see, sacrifice is giving away something that we would much rather keep, or giving away something that we really need. Self-sacrifice is not giving away your second-hand or unwanted clothes, all right? That's not sacrificing a bean, because you didn't want them anyway. It's not about giving away knowing that you have enough left. It's not going to. It's like people say, oh yes, I sacrificed my takeaway pizza tonight. I had to go to the shop and just buy a pizza instead. That's not sacrifice, right? It's not sacrifice. You didn't sacrifice your pizza. Sacrifice is not having a pizza and not eating anything that night. That's sacrifice, right? That it's something that costs you. And as I was praying, I was thinking about my life and some of your lives, obviously, and thinking that we very rarely sacrifice. Most of us live really nice lives, right? But we are called to sacrifice, truly sacrifice sometimes, and actually give things up. It's actually giving something that we could really do with. In our last series, I came across a story which kind of illustrates the point. It was a family who were really challenged one day about supporting a charity, and they came back from this meeting and sat around the table, and as a family talked about, well, they'd love to support this charity. And something amazing happened as they talked and discussed, and that self-sacrifice began to show itself. And it began like this, and this is the reason why this story stuck with me. It began by a teenage girl saying these words. You ready? I could do without my phone for a few months and we could give the money to the charity.
Now, for girls, that's a sacrifice, right? Imagine, girls, if you didn't have your phone for a few months. Oh, you'd actually be fine, by the way. You'd get over it probably after about 3 days. But the thought, I need my phone. Because I talk to my kids, girls and boys, and they talk about their phone, and they need their phone. It's a need in their life. It's not, right? But it's a sacrifice. And this one kind of sacrificial act from this teenage girl in this family set the whole family talking. And they talked about holidays, and Dad talked about wanting to upgrade his car and all sorts of things. And in the end, without ruining their financial budget, but by sacrificing things, they managed to raise $15,000 over 3 years. And I just want to say that each one of you, me and self, we can costly sacrifice things, and trust us. Trust me, you'll still be okay. You'll still be okay. But sacrifice should cost. And the second thing, a sacrifice is about giving our best. It's about giving our best. It's not just about giving, it's about giving our best. For those of you who've read the Old Testament, and one of God's major complaints in the Old Testament is this, especially the prophets, is that the Israelites loved sacrificing duff animals. It's like, we're going to give God a ram. It's the worst one in the flock, but we're going to give him a ram as if it was a sacrifice. And God said, it's not a sacrifice. It's rubbish. It's the worst one that you wanted killing anyway. A sacrifice is giving the best. And you know, in relationships, if you give your boyfriend or girlfriend the worst of everything, your relationship won't last. Right? Just won't, right? Look at what? Well, you don't really like me that much because you give me the worst of everything. I get the drop ends of whatever. I'm going to say something else then, but I can't. And if you don't know what it doesn't matter. Anyway, but it's about giving your best. It's about giving not that which is left over, but that which is the best in your life. And self-sacrifice is this. It should cost you something, and it should be the best in your life. The second question was, what does it look like for us? And I was thinking and praying about this, and God just really dropped something in my heart, which I want to share with you, and it's kind of like a prayer request, but a really, really serious one. I mean, Dave and Kat and some of the other guys at the moment are all turning 40, right? I turned 50 sometime this year, but for a few months, same. I think about my life, and I've come from a blessed generation. If we're really honest, we don't really know what sacrifice is. We've lived through peace and prosperity. I mean, real prosperity, not just pretend. We're very, very blessed. And we get to travel. We have connections across the entire world. All of us do, if we want it. It's all there. We know little of true sacrifice and true sacrificial love. But I want you to begin to pray. You'll be able to tell in about 50, 60 years, right, whether this is right or wrong. But I think our children and our grandchildren will have to sacrifice. And what they need is a generation before them to be praying for them, to give them the strength and the determination to do what is right and to sacrifice all that they need to when the time comes. Because this season that we've lived in, an incredibly blessed one, will not last forever. History says so. And I just want to say that we are a blessed generation. Thank God for that. But let's be praying for the generations to come. These things I'm going to talk about, I want to apply to where we are. But we need to begin to pray for the bigger challenges that I think that our children and grandchildren, normal and spiritual, will have to walk through, I think, as they follow Jesus. That's just an aside, right? Serious aside. So what does it look like? A few stories for you. Genesis chapter 6, verse 9, we have the story of Noah. He is one of my favorite characters in the Bible because of the amazingly silly thing he had to do. I just love it. Because I just put myself in Noah's position. He's minding his own business, having his family, presumably farming and that kind of thing, living to a ripe old age, when God suddenly calls up into his life. And it says this in verse 9. This is the account of Noah. So Genesis 6, verse 9. Noah was a righteous man, blameless among the people of his time, and he walked with God. Noah had three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Now the earth was corrupt in God's sight and was full of violence. God saw how corrupt the earth had become, for all the people on earth had corrupted their ways. So God said to Noah, I'm going to put an end to all the people, for the earth is filled with violence because of them. I'm surely going to destroy both them and the earth. So, he said, I just love this. So, make yourself an ark. And it wasn't just a small ark, was it? It was a blinking massive ship. It was huge, absolutely huge. It's just ginormous ship, bigger than this room. Much bigger than this room, twice, three times, as big, like a huge ship. And Noah lived in a desert, right? He lived in a desert. He didn't live by the sea. He lived in a desert where it didn't rain. It didn't rain. There was water flowing through it. He had to build this huge, stonking boat. As he was going along, I'm utterly convinced his neighbors said, Noah, what are you doing? And Noah said these words, God is going to destroy everything, including you, in a few years' time. So I'm building a boat. Now, imagine how much they must have laughed at him. Imagine the stories going down the local pub. Just imagine what was going on, what they said, how they ostracized him, how they made fun of him, how everywhere he walked, there'd be sniggers down the street. And there goes Noah. The mad guy is building a big boat in his backyard for the flood that's coming in a few years. Crazy, right? Yeah. Crazy. He sacrificed his reputation. If we are going to live for God, if we're going to experience true love with God and with each other, we need to sacrifice and be willing to sacrifice our reputation. Yeah. We need to be willing to sacrifice our reputation. Love sacrifices the reputation for another. They really do. And Noah did it in stacks, right? But so did each one of us. At work, and start at work. You guys have got jobs. At work, do you fit in or do you stand out? If God says for you to do something, do you do it or do you back off so you don't stand out? Do you love God enough to look an idiot at work? Seriously. I know some are Christians that fit in and they make a zillion excuses. And they kind of know their excuses. We need to look foolish and put our reputation to one side. I played sport when I was young. I used to love it. I played school, which is always interesting. And I played in some Christian football leagues. It was amazing the language that came out of Christian footballers. But when you're in sports or in your leisure activity, are you willing to look foolish to do the right thing? Or do you fit in with your friends, your mates? So many Christian men, at least, they fit in with the culture they're in rather than bringing the culture of God into the place, which is what we're called to do. Perhaps at the school gates, a bit gossipy. Not that I've done a lot of school gate work in my life, I have to say. Michelle's done most of that. But do you fit in, girls, mothers, or any other social environment? Or are you willing to put your reputation at risk to look foolish in the eyes of the world because you love Jesus? Self-sacrifice, I think for us, at least in our period, looks like putting our reputation looking foolish in the world. How about David? David, 1 Samuel 17, another one of my favorite stories. David was a young man, probably in his late teens, and he was sent by his dad, it says in 1 Samuel 17, to go and see how his brothers were doing, his older brothers who were at war with the Philistines. And his dad sent him, verse 20 of 1 Samuel 17, it says, early in the morning, David left the flock with a shepherd, loaded up, and set out as Jesse's father had directed. And he reached the camp as the army was going out to the battle position, shouting the war cry. Seemingly, they used to go out every day, line up against each other, shout at each other, and then go back to camp. Weird. Anyway, that's what they did. And they did it day after day. And Israel and the Philistines were drawing up their lines of vision. David left the things with the keeper of supplies and ran to the battle lines and found his brothers. As he was talking with them, Goliath, the Philistine champion from Gath, stepped out from his lines and shouted his usual defiance. And David heard it. David heard it. And then it says, when the Israelites saw the man, they all ran from him in great fear. But David heard it. Something happened in David's life in that moment. He heard something.
He didn't hear Goliath shouting at the Israelites. He didn't hear that. He heard a man abusing the name of God. And something stirred inside his heart and went, not on my watch, mate. Not on my watch, mate. He said, you can't say that about God. And we can read about it later in the chapter when it comes to facing face to face and says, you know, I know you come with strength, but I come in the name of the Lord God Almighty. I'm going to chop your head off. I love that. I'm going to chop your head off. And he just chop his head off. It's all bloodthirsty and great boy stuff. Anyway, but self-sacrifice is this. It's not thinking about yourself. It's not thinking about yourself. Almost all of us in every situation think about ourselves first. If David had really truly thought about it, he would have not done it. Everybody around him thought it was very brave, but also very stupid. Right? They thought he was an idiot. He was a small boy who wasn't used to war. And David says, yeah, but I'm really good with stones. And his brother was like, that's fine. He's got a big shield. Stones won't be effective. And I've said this before, if you've been here long, but everybody reads the story and thinks that actually the slingshot and hitting the stone in his forehead was easy. It wasn't. Goliath had a massive door, like 6 foot high shield. The idea of the shield was to hide behind it when stones and arrows were coming. That was the whole point. So when David walked out with a sling and went sling, 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 and Goliath saw him, all he's going like, seriously? Clunk, next. David didn't stand a chance. He shouldn't have stood a chance. But he wasn't thinking about himself. I want to suggest, if you want to love God, you need to stop thinking about yourself quite so much. That's self-sacrifice. You need to think about him. I can apply it to your own relationships as well, obviously. Think about the one you love more than yourself. But you need to think about God first. And probably God only. Because if David had been listening to any other voice, anywhere at all, he would have backed off. And this story would never have been written. He would have never become king. And he would have never been a man after God's own heart. But he became all those things. Because in that moment, as a teenager, late teenager, as old as some of you guys in here, he said, that cannot happen. I love God too much to let that stand. Therefore, it's not going to be about me in this moment. It's going to be about God and my love for him. And I'm going to go and sort this sucker out. I love that. And that is self-sacrificial love in our day. Oh, another one of my favorite stories. If you're here long enough, you hear all these stories. Lots. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Oh, Daniel 3. What a great story. The king, Nebuchadnezzar, puts up this massive statue and he calls everybody to come and gather on this big plain. And when everything, all the trumpets and cymbals and everything play, everybody's got to bow down and worship this new god called Nebuchadnezzar. And these three men stand out in front of the whole crowd and don't kneel down. And he calls them across. He calls them across and because somebody notices them, unsurprising enough. And he says, look, I really like you. I'm going to give you another chance. And next time everything plays, if you bow down, it's all fine. And if you don't, then I'm going to throw you in the fiery furnace. And I just want to read what is recorded about what they said. So Shadrach, Meshach, so I'm in Daniel 3, verse 16, if you're taking notes. Daniel 3, 16. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you in this matter. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God we serve is able to save us from it. And he will rescue us from your hand, O king. But even if he does not, we want you to know, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold you have set up. We don't care you're the king and emperor of probably one of the biggest and greatest kingdoms that's ever been. We will not do that because it's against God who we love. And self-sacrifice these days does involve standing up against authority when the authority is wrong. Only when it's wrong, but when it's wrong, it's standing up against it and saying, I know that's what you believe and what you say I should do, but I am not doing it. And even if that means I lose my job, I am still not doing it. And that's what self-sacrifice is. It's actually loving God and saying, we will stand up. Some of you are in environments where you actually need to stand up against your boss. maybe on behalf of yourself or against or on behalf of other people within your organization. I need to say, God, I need to stand up for this. And even if I'm the only one, and it goes all patient, I know, God, that you're able to protect me and that you can protect me and save me from whatever might happen to me. But even if you don't, this cannot carry on under my watch. And that's what self-sacrifice is. It's about standing up against authorities, only when necessary. I'll emphasize that. But actually standing up against it and saying, I will not let that pass. And that could be all sorts of situations. It could be financial. It could be sexual advances. It could be all sorts of things that happen in your workplace or in places you know and say, that's not happening. It's not happening. It's just not happening. And I will sacrifice whatever is necessary because that is not happening on my watch. I will do something about it. And whatever the consequences are, I will face because this is not right. And that's what these guys did. And well, they must have got pretty scared, right? Pretty scared. Bound up. Thrown in. Then it was really cool for a while. Walking around the furnace and coming out with Jesus. But they didn't know that. They said whatever. And there's other stories about that as well. The final one before I just want to finish off is this. This is the toughest one of all of them. Self-sacrificial love. And I have to say, I said to God this afternoon, can I not do this one? This one will be much more fun not to do. Because the others you kind of get, right? You accept them. They're good biblical stuff. But the next one, none of us like. I don't like. Matthew 19, verse 29. Jesus says this to us. I'll start from verse 28 to put it in context for you. Start at 27, actually. Peter answered him, we have left everything to follow you. What then will there be for us? And Jesus said to them, I'll tell you the truth. At the renewal of all things, when the Son of Man sits down on a glorious throne, you who have followed me will also sit on 12 thrones judging the 12 tribes of Israel. And, this is a bit I want to listen to, and everyone who has left houses or brothers or sisters or fathers or mothers or children or fields, as for my sake, will receive 100 times as much and will inherit eternal life. But many who are first will be last, and many who are last will be first. Self-sacrificial love sometimes means leaving those that we really love. Really love. And I wouldn't be your pastor if I didn't mention this, as much as I don't really want to. Paul writes in 1 Corinthians 9:5 that God called him not to take a wife, and therefore he travels without his wife. So he has no relationship that way in his life. It's gone. He says, I'm free to, but God's called me not to. And self-sacrificial love sometimes means that we leave those that we do love. Now, I pray that God will never call me to do that. I don't want to. I suspect most of you will join in that prayer, right? But God might call some of you at some point. And he might call some of our children and grandchildren to do it. Honestly, might. So even if we live a blessed life and never have to face that, history says that will have to be faced again. And we need to pray for ourselves and for those who come in after us. That all these things I've talked about and so many other sacrificial love things that we will have to do, that we have the courage, the bravery, the insight, the hope, the eternity in our heart and soul, that will enable us to do it. Because in those moments, each one of us, including our children and grandchildren, will experience love, inexpressible love, that all of us desire to live in, both now and in the future. As I said to start with, self-sacrificial love enables us to truly experience love. And some of you are sat here and say, I just want to experience the love of God. And God just simply says to you, if you would sacrifice for me, you would experience a deeper way of love. It's not that God doesn't love you or that God's experience of love isn't there for you. It's just you don't unlock it until you get into that place. Yeah. You just don't, right? And it's not, like here, God is not withholding his love. Yeah. You're just keeping the door shut on it so you don't experience it properly. That's what, does that make sense from the front to the back? Yeah. And it's why this message is so important and why I wanted to preach it. Because so many of your friends and your fellow Christians who don't come here, go to the place, love to experience more of God's love, but it will cost to open the door on the love that God has for you. And it's saying, God, I'm happy to live self-sacrificially for you, towards you and towards the people that I work with and I'm part of and my families and my church that I am. Real love costs. But as we give the cost, we experience the real love that we desire both from our Father, our God, and also from each other.
Thanks for listening to this week's message. Why not follow us on Twitter at @valley_church or come visit us at one of our locations on a Sunday. To find out more, visit valleychurch.eu. Have a great week.